This text begins in a way that tells us things are serious. You know, when some people want to mock in a way the maybe extreme ways of presenting the gospel, they often would say, "Thus saith the Lord." But here it is, "Hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord." That occurs around about 39 times in the Bible, most of which I think all but one reference in the Old Testament. And it's not that all of God's words are not serious, but when you hear that, you want to be paying attention. What it reminded me of is as a boy when, and this has probably happened to you, or maybe not, you all were, like, I'm sure, perfect children, but when you're misbehaving, in my family I was called Tony. But when I did something seriously wrong, I heard from my mother, "Anthony Dean Arthur Bailey." And you knew when that was said, you're in trouble. This is serious stuff. Thus saith the Lord. The reason that such extreme language is used by the prophet is because this is very serious. What God is about to proclaim and to declare and to share with the people is serious. It is serious because it goes to the heart of the very relationship and identity of the people and their commitment and relationship with God. It is serious. What is curious about this, and I think we can relate to in our own lives, are the kinds of questions that are asked and posed. We know from life experience that it's about asking the right question. There's a story that's told, it's a true story. I heard a preacher related that happened in his own family at one point. His father had difficulty with his blood pressure. Was always low, and everything they tried, they could not get his blood pressure corrected. He was x-rayed and blood test and poked and probed and tried this medication and that. Nothing seemed to work. One day there was a visiting physician from England who was accompanying the family doctor. And as he came in with another complaint about how futile all the efforts had been to deal with his low blood pressure, the visiting doctor who was there asked him, "Are you by any chance from Southern Ireland?" That was an odd question. It just so happened that this man was from Southern Ireland. Because this particular doctor knew that there was a genetic abnormality in some families in that particular region. And you had to understand that to know how to engage this low blood pressure. Asking the right question can get us to places where other questions will not. The use of questions in this particular text is very poignant. The first one appears at face value to be like the second questions, but it is not. Let me remind you. "What wrong did your fathers find in me that they went far from me and went after worthlessness and became worthless? They did not say, 'Where is the Lord who brought us up from the land of Egypt, who led us out of the wilderness?'" It sounds like an accusation, but on closer reading, I believe it is meant to be taken as rhetoric. In other words, unlike the present generation that Jeremiah is talking about, the ancestors who had come out of the experience of Egypt into the promised land did not have to ask those kinds of questions because they had fully experienced the liberation of God in their lives, the restoration of their worthwhileness and their identity and their community. So they did not have to ask those questions like they are asking today. The whole thrust of this text is an invitation to say, how are we remembering God? Have we forgotten where God is? Do we ask, God, where are you in my choices for school? Where are you in my life? Where are you in my career selection? Where are you in my friends and relationship with them? Where are you in my family? Where are you in my health? Where are you in my children? Where are you in this city? Where are you in this world? It is that attentiveness that enables us to rehearse again and again, not only what God has done, but what God is doing. Now, we can be forgiven for wondering about that, especially with recent developments. Where is God in this terrorist plot that seems to have been uncovered in our own city? Where was God 5 years ago in the tumult and inundation of New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina? Where is God now in the flood and the displacement of millions of people in Pakistan? Where is God in the midst of our own family crisis? Where is God in our world today? I'm reflecting over the week that questions that were posed to me in my various acts of pastoral duties that got me thinking a lot about our text today. I went to the hospital to visit someone, and the nurses said they were not quite ready. I needed to wait for a time. And so I went to the lounge to sit and just to flip through the magazines that were there as I waited. Another patient came in and started talking to me. You know, the inevitable thing. Who are you and what do you do? Well, I told him, I'm a minister and visiting someone there. Oh, I used to go to church. In fact, I was raised in the church. I used to believe very strongly in God. But I'm not so sure anymore. You see, I got this virus in my brain and it's affected my mobility. I'm partially paralyzed. And I prayed and prayed that I would be healed. In fact, over my life, most of what I ever prayed for was just to be healthy. I didn't pray for riches. I didn't pray for any big thing, just that I would be healthy. And look, the very thing I prayed for, I don't have it. I'm not so sure about this God. And what ensued was a very heartfelt, open conversation about faith and about abandoning faith and about wrestling. And then he said to me, you know, I still pray every night. I'm not sure I believe in this God anymore, but I still pray every night. Because you know what, minister, he said, I've realized where else and to whom else can I go? Where is God? Where is God in your life? Where is God in your choices? Where is God in our world? That's the question. What the prophet is saying to the people, and I believe is saying to us, as Paul says in Romans, these things were written in former years for our instruction. So here on this Sunday in August, these words are also applied to us. The critique that Jeremiah levels against the people is that they have forgotten what God has done in the past. They have forgotten and they have betrayed that fidelity. They have betrayed the way in which God intended for them to live. And the leaders in particular are at fault, but they are only representations of the whole people. And God levels indeed a lawsuit against them. That's what he says when he's contending. Because at the beginning when he formed the people, he called the nations and even creation to witness. And now he's called them. Look, O heavens, be appalled at what has happened. Creation suffers when we abandon our call to follow faithfully this God who has set us here. Others who look upon those who are supposed to be Christians and see the ways in which we have denied and let the reputation of God down, they also are called as witnesses. Another question that was posed to me just yesterday. Conducted a wedding, and after the wedding at the reception, was sitting at a table, was engaged in a very deep conversation with someone who's seemingly champion of the day is Christopher Hitchens, the atheist who has denounced Christianity and Islam and Judaism. And we were talking back and forth, and he turned and he asked me, do you believe that everyone has a spiritual dimension? I said, yes, I do. And that led us into a different kind of conversation about how do you prove that? And I said, I cannot prove that to you. And then we began to speak about what kinds of things he held very dearly he could not prove to me. I said, what we are engaged in are acts of faith. For all the unfaith that you are claiming you have, you are expressing a lot of faith in your position. I respected that conversation. And it reminded me about the questions that lead us to ask, have we forgotten where God is? Have we forgotten? Bono, leader of the band U2, chronicles, if you listen to his music over time, his own faith development. He asks questions that we would want on our lips also. But on the particular album, What You Cannot Leave Behind, I think was the name of it. It's a very interesting statement that is made. On the cover of that album is a train station, and superimposed on the departure sign, it looks like graffiti, is J333. Now it just looks like random graffiti. But it is actually a quote from Jeremiah 33, verse 3. Search me, seek me, and I will reveal to you unsearchable things that you cannot know. The questions that lead us back to God are those that enable us to find unsearchable things we cannot know. Jeremiah says to the people, for my people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and they have created for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Those are metaphors that we sometimes exchange what is good and true for that which is worthless, what is vapor, what is here for a moment and gone. Do you remember Jesus' encounter with the woman at the well in John 4? She was earnestly desiring to hold to her position of the Samaritan ways of worship, had come for the well to drink. And Jesus says to her, I will give you living water, springs of living water, the kind of water that doesn't go stale. You see, in the arid conditions of Israel, as it is today, it was then, with hardly any rainfall, it was necessary for people to make cisterns, to carve out these crevices in the earth, the limestone, and they would plaster them to collect the water in the rainy season, so that in the dry times they could draw from those cisterns. Over time, that plaster would crack and they would leak. and there would be no water in time of need. This is the image that Jeremiah is using. You have made for yourself that which is leaky. The things you have invested in, your fame, your job, your car, your clothes, the things that you think will indeed define you as most important, will leak over time. And what will you be left with? Come back to the water that will nourish your soul. Come back to a relationship with me, God says to the people. Remember, I have been faithful in past and I will continue to be faithful even now. Forgetting where God is threatens our life, our community, and our faith. What do you most want? What do you most want this year in your life, in your work, in school, in your friendship? What do you most want? My prayer, as I try to answer that, is that that will prominently include a deepening relationship with God that does not wane with faulty memory. My prayer is that as we go grocery shopping, driving, walking, cycling, skateboarding, to concerts, to music, as we cook, whatever it is, may we ask in every moment of our lives, where is God right now? That steady accompaniment will help us rehearse again and again the presence of one who wants to feed us. As it is our daily requirement for water and food, so may it be we understand our daily desires most met by the most supreme nutrient of all, the presence, grace, and love of God. Do not forget where God is. God has blessed us and is within us and calls us to remember. And what that does is connect us with each other and the world in profound ways. Let us not forget where God is. There is much grace, I believe, in this text. For all the judgment, there is much grace. For the reason that God is so upset with the people is because God is even more in love with them than God is upset. And the reason this matters so much, thus saith the Lord, Anthony Dean Arthur Bailey, is because God jealously, lovingly, enduringly will hold on to us. For even if we forget where God is, the good news, God will not forget where we are. Amen.